It's time now to look through the window of baseball with Bruce Jenkins, brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors, the Truett and White, the professional builder's choice in their new showroom in Monterey. Not so new anymore. I've been saying it all season long. Bruce, how are you on this Saturday?
How you doing, Marty? Doing well.
Good. Yeah, everything's good. And, boy, yeah. The Kansas City bullpen, how did you like the flamethrowers last night?
Yeah, that's modern-day baseball at its best. That's exactly what you want. You know, it just reverses that whole theory of, well, we'll get this pitcher out of there, we'll work the count, we'll get his pitch count up, and then we'll get into the bullpen. It's like a nightmare. It's like with this team and a few others, it's like the last thing you want to have happen.
The only hope they had was with Frazier in the sixth inning, and we didn't get a down goes Frazier. It didn't happen.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, each of those guys is a little bit different, but they all throw hard. They all have phenomenal stuff one after another, and it's the old Tony La Russa, you know, build up to the bullpen theory in modern-day form, and it's pretty impressive.
You know, Kansas City has a tremendous baseball history, and, you know, people forget about the town, and I know the ownership has been, you know, really sort of on the cheap side as far as adding players, and maybe it's Midwest, maybe they don't have a big contract in TV and all that. But Kansas City baseball goes back, you know, the old Kansas City Blues, the Yankee minor league team. The Yankees essentially bought the Philadelphia Athletics and put them in Kansas City with their guy who was on the Yankee board of directors as the owner, and made all the trades with him. And then Charlie Finley came in and signed all the great players that eventually became the Oakland A's. And then Kansas City got the franchise, the Kansas City Royals with George Brett, and all those great teams. And it's really got a great baseball legacy.
Yeah, I mean, it's if some would say that Kansas City A's continued to be a minor league franchise because they served up so many players to the Yankees in the 50s, that you would have thought that they were an affiliate of theirs. You know, through some trades that were usually seemed to swing the Yankees' way. Whenever they needed somebody, they'd go down to Kansas City and get them. But absolutely. I mean, I made many trips there in the 80s covering the A's. I got a chance to cover the 1980 and 85 World Series. And, you know, it's a great baseball town. You got the good barbecue in town. The park's great. Great atmosphere. And it really does have a long and kind of varied history.
Yeah, it does. It really does. In fact, you get to see the freeway behind center field. Isn't that I-70 back there?
Yeah, that's not the greatest. That's not like the old Oakland Hills and the old
the BART train
or Chavez Ravine. You can even see the hotel you're staying at most of the time, but the field's great. When they took the AstroTurf out and put the grass in, then it really did become a nice little Midwestern paradise.
Yeah, very interesting. Bruce, this time of year for the Giants, and I sort of opened the show with this, they're 4-4 on the road trip. You look at the four losses, they all could have been turned around. But, you know, every game now becomes magnified. The Dodger games become 3 out of 4 from the Angels. They just wallop them. And now the Brewers, and now here the Giants with Kansas City, and the Dodgers are with the Brewers. You know, you win 2 or you lose 2, you get this feeling again that you're in it or out of it just by a few games, but the games now get fewer. We're down to 46. It actually becomes, I think, little seasons now.
Yeah, I tend to get a little impatient in August. You know, they talk about the dog days and everything. It's kind of at the point where the rosters are more or less set. Somebody might make a waiver deal here and there, but you kind of want to get to September and get to the real stretch drive. You know, I guess that's why they call it the dog days, but it never ceases to be interesting. And, you know, the Giants, I don't know, we talked about this all year about how they're vulnerable to, you know, their lack of depth, and they seem to put out a little bit of a makeshift lineup almost every night now. The belt injury is really hurting them. But, you know, 3 games out, and like you say, every game means a ton. And it's just going to be more interesting as it goes.
You know, there's something like 20 and 33, something like that, in their last 53 games. And 54 would be a third of the season. But still, there's hope. They sell hope.
Well, yeah, and rightly so. Of course there's hope. I mean, they've got a bunch of guys who have done it before. Just when they throw up a couple stinkers, they'll put some runs on the board, a couple pumps, you know, a couple inspiring plays by Pence. The Panda does something here and there, and great pitching performance, and maybe the Dodgers slide a little bit. You know, just the Dodgers look real good lately, but they just Hanley Ramirez is hurt again, and they're trying to figure out what to do with their fourth and fifth starters. So they're not going to run away with it. I think I think it's going to be inside of five games and probably a lot less the rest of the way.
Wow, pretty good. Bruce Jenkins with us. Derek Jeter today, another milestone for him, going past Honus Wagner. Bruce, when it's all said and done with Derek Jeter, and I say one of the greatest ever, or just an accumulation of numbers? He's a World Series champion, not the greatest shortstop at all. How do you look at Jeter's whole career vis-a-vis the entire breadth of baseball, the history of baseball?
Well, the funny thing about Jeter is that, you know, as he entered his prime, he happened to be playing in the golden age of American League shortstops. I mean, I think everybody, you know, Garcia Parra's numbers were way better. Ripken was even more iconic. Alex Rodriguez in Seattle was just a god, you know, at that time. And Jeter was sort of lucky to be in the argument, really. His advantage is longevity, especially over A-Rod and Garcia Parra. His advantage is playing with the Yankees. He's the all-time Yankee shortstop. He'll play in that lineup with Ruth and Mantle and everybody else. And just the class act that he is, so the fact that he's still around banging base hits, this is fantastic. But he's really, he's going to surpass most of those guys. I think, you know, when you talk about the all-time shortstops, I think he's got to be in there. Along with the likes of Honus Wagner, as you mentioned, some of the guys in the early part of the century who racked up, you know, incredible numbers. But he's in that conversation for sure.
Well, yeah, if he's got maybe 3,700 hits when it's all said and done. And, I mean, you're talking Hank Aaron. You know, these are numbers that Stan Musial who go, you know, these are numbers that are incredible numbers. So, it's just something about him. You talk about Aaron or Wagner or Musial or Mays, and then you say Derek Jeter. It just doesn't quite have the same ring for me.
Well, no, it doesn't. I mean, because he never hit 370. He never hit 50 homers as a shortstop. He's just been really good and great when it counted forever.
Yeah.
and that's, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, and you win World Series, and we see it even with the Giants. You talk about shortstops. Now, Crawford's not hitting. They've got him out. They've got Duffy in there tonight. Panic is at second base. How about that? Here's your infield for tonight. You got Ishikawa at first. You got Panic at second. Duffy at short and Sandoval at third. Try to win a pennant with that.
Yeah, that's weak.
I mean, really?
I can't believe Ishikawa's back with the team. I mean, he's a great guy, but I just don't get that. Duffy, you know, he puts the ball in play. He hasn't struck anybody as a really dangerous hitter yet. And you know, with Crawford out of there, you're always going to be suffering. So yeah, that's going to be tough. And if they get into that bullpen again with that lineup, it's going to be extremely tough.
Tony La Russa was in the news this week, and he's very outspoken, and I admire him for what he says. He expanded a little more on the McCutcheon-Goldschmidt incident. And he said, look, Pittsburgh pitches up and in. Look at their targets. And when they do that, they got to live by that. And, you know, of course, as Bernie Pleskov was on with us earlier today, they brought in a middle reliever, Delgado, in the ninth inning to plunk McCutcheon right in the back. And, you know,
yeah.
But here's La Russa. He just lays it out for you.
No, he's great. But I think he's wrong on two counts. First of all, he was about as big a red ass when it came to headhunting as ever existed in the game. He was one of the real princes of vengeance, you know, who went after an eye for an eye, that sort of thing, and really was as angry and vitriolic about that as anyone. And secondly, you bet they're pitching up and in. That pitchers need to pitch up and in. They always did, and now in the modern era with guys crowding the plate and diving into pitches and not getting out of the way, you pitch a ball like Delgado, which is about 3 inches inside, and hits the guy, and all hell breaks loose. I mean, pitchers have to go up and in. That's how you establish a little bit of intimidation, how you balance the scales. And there's no way that pitch should have hit him. He should have got out of the way. The catcher would have snagged it if it had gone through to him. And
yeah.
I just get really tired of this, getting all outraged over an inside pitch that hits a guy in the hand because he's a statue up there.
Yeah, people don't know how to get out of the way, and that goes back to Little League, college, and everything else. They just don't learn that. Bruce, another thing I was thinking about was the Cuban player, this Castillo, is going through another, showcase, and all the teams are down there. The Giants are down there as well. And I look at Cespedes, I look at Puig, I look at Abreu, And I'm saying to myself, even if it costs $80 million, I mean, really, even if it, yeah. wouldn't you rather have him than go out and re-sign some Marlon Byrd, you know, for, you know, or B.J. Upton for 85? I mean, these people come out now, and if you're lucky enough to snag one of the Cuban players who comes out, you're getting someone who is a tremendous athlete and a tremendous star. I and even if the money is crazy, I think you have to go for it.
Yeah, I think the Giants need to win one of those.
Right? Yeah.
You know, the Puig thing was it really came out of nowhere, and the Dodgers were all over that, and they signed him without really seeing him play. They went off of batting practice, you know, and Cespedes was a little bit like that too. Abreu, the Giants were in on that, and they got outbid. But eventually they've got to win one of these, especially in their case. They're not developing hitters. They're definitely not developing home run hitters. We'll see about Mack Williamson, but he's missing most of this year. And, you know, their depth is horrible. It's killing them, and they got to win one of those. And I agree. I think even if they were to, let's say they did win the bidding war, spent a fortune more than they wanted, and it turned out he wasn't going to be Abreu or Cespedes, well, you know, at least you went for it.
Yeah, and he may be. And but you know it's worth the gamble, because there's some, when free agency happens, we see it every year. Jacoby Ellsbury, $135 million. I mean, you know, it's something that's completely nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and here's
exactly.
a guy.
Yeah, I mean, I was not to interrupt. But, yeah. You know, who would give a ton of money to B.J. Upton's a great example. He's in like 218.
Oh, he's up to that. Is he that high already?
You know, I mean, geez, that's absolutely right. You're looking at guys with you know, with Ellsbury is a serviceable player for sure. But I mean, in terms of really dynamic hitter along the lines of these Cuban guys that are coming out, he's not even close.
Yeah, and I if I'm the Giants, and I really believe this, that you know, with the organization they have, with the amount of money they spend, with the fan base they have, I think they have to get into this one. And win one. And like you said, you got to win one.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't agree more. But you got to freshen things up a little bit. It's getting a little stale.
Yeah, yeah, offensively it is. Because as I say, the lineup tonight, I mean, you're looking at the lineup. They're not going to go down the stretch with a rookie in the infield. I firmly believe that. They never have. And I think, as Bobby Evans told us earlier, they're looking at the waiver wire every day. Brian Roberts, I know it's a name. He hasn't had a great year, but he's another one who just hit the market.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Brian Roberts. I think if they knew they could have Belt and Pagan and everybody else in there, I think they could get by with Panic. You know, he's not a bad hitter. He goes at the opposite field real well. Can hit lefties. He doesn't look scared in the field. I think they could go with him. I agree with you. I don't think they want to, but I don't know. Brian Roberts doesn't thrill me a hell of a lot, other than the fact that he's older.
Well, yeah, and he's been around, and you know.
Yeah.
But again, a guy
have experience.
Yeah, a guy not having a good year.
A guy like Gordon Beckham, I would like more. He's played a lot more. He's been more injury free.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a lot of problems. He came out with Posey, and they were considered kind of equals coming out of college. You know, he's a big star, and he just really looks the part. And maybe a change of scene could help him. I don't know what's going on with him and his availability, but
we'll find out.
Like
they come in this week. I mean, we'll talk to the Hawk about it, and we'll find out.
Yeah.
Just, you like Hawk Harrelson?
Oh yeah. I mean, he kind of drives me nuts with the homerism, but he's just too good. He's too funny. He's too much experience. He's too much enthusiasm. And boy, to hear him talk, I mean, you've had him on. He's
I love
fantastic.
It. I love it.
To hear him talk about anything is just priceless.
I know. I really. He's like Dwayne Kuiper. Just read the phone book. I don't care what it is. I just want to.
Yeah.
Just want to. Last thing for you. Last night there was a tag of Pence at third base, and you know the manager comes out, and here's, you know, the replay. It's turned around, and I don't know, for some reason it bugged me. Even if it went in the Giants' favor, it was a great throw by Aoki. When do you see great throws like this? Like an Ichiro throw, and a great read by Pence, and all of a sudden the excitement and setting up the inning, and all of a sudden, wait a minute. His foot lifted off the bag a millisecond, and the glove just happened to be there. I don't know. It just bothered me.
Yeah, it's irritating. The most irritating ones are the ones that are extremely close, and maybe the player in question goes, okay, we got to review that. I'm sure I was safe by a quarter of an inch, and then they look at it, and they look at it for 6 minutes, and they go, yeah, by God, he did beat that by a millionth of a second. You know, that's just ridiculous. It's the calls that are just blatant, you know, that really need review. But the whole process is bothersome to me. I mean, let's face it, Marty, if it's the World Series now and it's Game 7 in a tie game, you have to review that Pence play because he's on third, you know.
Yeah.
But what bugs me is just the whole charade of the managers coming out, the fact that they have challenges, the whole New York system. You don't know who's back there. And they spent $1 million on that big plant in New York, so they can't tear it down. But everything should be localized. There should be a crew in each park. They're not umpires. They're not affiliated with the umps in any way. They're not sympathetic to the umps in any way. And they decide instantly on we're going to review it, and then they do review it, and it's just infinitely faster.
Yeah, they're going to change this process a little bit. I can see
that
coming.
Yeah, they are. But like I say, though, they're not going to dismantle that big fancy thing they came up with in New York, which is a shame. But at the very least, they could be accountable on who's doing this.
Yeah.
And they should not be umpires. There's too much familiarity.
Yeah, they're going to limit the number of challenges that you can even walk out and even look at. You know what they should eliminate? The guys in the clubhouse with the video.
Absolutely.
Who needs it? Look, if you thought it's wrong, come on out and take your shot. And that's the way it goes.
The problem with challenges, though, is if you run out of challenges and you get a Don Dinkinger call and you can't challenge it, you're screwed and everybody else is upset.
Well, then the umpire's on their own. Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's as long as the umps can initiate it. But, they may not. What if they don't feel like it?
All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. I think we're going to have a new baseball commissioner next week. Maybe we'll get some of your thoughts on that.
Okay.
There's a TV guy in the middle of it. Maybe Roseanne will be the assistant commissioner. Tom Warner.
Or maybe Rosanna Dana.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live fan.
If it could go wrong, it goes wrong. And that's the story of life. Yeah, but Tom Warner from Roseanne fame, the producer, I guess, he's in the mix. All right. Hey, Bruce, thanks so much. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Marty.
All right. Always a pleasure. All right. More coming up on the Sports Leader right here.